The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another edition of Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. This is a business show. Michael Coleman, he is the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. They cover 35 counties in the great state of Alabama. They work through Feeding America, this wonderful work. And so we talk a lot of non-for-profit stuff, but we also talk a lot of business. And we're going to talk about women's business today specifically. Michael, first of all, how you been, man? You having a good week?
As always, it's a challenge in this world of dealing with people with that are battling hunger and food insecurity. But I tell you, it's so rewarding to be part of helping people overcome barriers in their life and to become everything that you and I believe God created them to be. And so thankful for the opportunity, thankful for being able to get with you each week and talk about things that are important from the business side of things.
Absolutely. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can hear this show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. We have another show that we're going to be starting here soon, specific to the Montgomery Area Food Bank and all the wonderful work they do. And you can also hear this show wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available on every major podcast. Indice is called Mission Minded with Michael Coleman, or just search Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, K-U-R-R-E. And of course, we take your emails as well. So I got an interesting email here, and I had a couple different ideas I want to do today, and then all of a sudden this came up, and I thought this is really interesting and really good. But Bethany in Birmingham, straight out question, you mentioned it, we talked briefly before we started the show. What are Michael's thoughts on women in the workplace? Not sure where she was thinking of going there or why she was asking that question. So I did a little research, and come to find out that in 2021 the Department of Labor came out with their women's statistics in the labor place. Roughly 1920, do you want to take an idea? And that was the first year they did the study. But can you tell me roughly the percentage of women in the workplace in the United States in 1920? You want to take a stab at that?
In 1920, I would say 18%.
It was 20.3%. Very good.
Hey, pretty good.
Yeah. And then in 2020, it was its second highest of all time. Do you want to take a stab at how many women are in the workplace in 2020? I will tell you, well, and give me that answer first, and I'll tell you where we are now.
I would say 72.
72% of the women in the workplace? No, 47.2%. So 40.
Well, I was way off.
Not 70% of women, but what percentage of the workplace?
I'm sorry. What percentage of the people in the workplace? Totally misunderstood the question.
Yeah, that's fine. It's almost 50-50, which is a little surprising to me, but that's a huge jump from 20.3%, you know, over 100 years ago.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The highest percentage of workplace that were women was 47.3% in 2016, and so we're just a tick below that. So you can make the argument that more women are working now in this country than ever before. What I thought was really interesting, and this is kind of fun, some women would probably not think so, but I went back to look at the top 10 occupations employing the largest number of women in 1920. And I'll start at number 10, farmers, general farms, number 9, cooks, number 8, bookkeepers and cashiers, number 7, salesmen, saleswomen, number 6, launderers and laundresses, number 5, farm laborers, number 4, clerks, number 3, stenographers and typewriters, which is kind of funny, you don't have that anymore. Number 2, teachers, and number 1 was other domestic and personal service. And I thought, well, I wonder how that's changed over the course of the last 100 years. Now it is number 10, waitresses, number 9, first-time supervisors, number 8, retail salespersons, number 7, managers, which is great, number 6, customer service representatives, number 5, cashiers, number 4, secretaries, number 3, nursing, which wasn't even the top 10 100 years ago. Yeah. Number 2, it just plain nurses, and the number 1 job now for women in 2020, at least as of the last 3 years, are teachers. When I tell you the differences, and obviously we have a lot of different occupational situations over the last 100 years, but when I give you that top 10 list, does anything particularly stick out to you or surprise you of the top jobs women are doing in this country as of 2020?
Maybe, not because of they're not capable of being managers. I'm surprised that there's some, I mean, that's good to hear, that so many have been elevated to greater positions of responsibility. I will tell you, there's no doubt that, my wife is a teacher. My daughter teaches at the college level. My youngest daughter does. My oldest daughter teaches second grade. So have a lot of teachers in my life. And it made me think, I recently was watching this whole idea about fairness in the workplace and talking about equity in the workplace in terms of opportunities for women. And this just flashed in my head, but it was a whole discussion about how do we create more equality. And it was funny because I think it was Jordan Peterson who was speaking to the issue and said, do we really want equality, or do we want to acknowledge that some people are better suited for other positions?
That's an interesting question. Yeah.
So for instance, is it important, 98% of bricklayers are men.
Mm-hmm.
So is it important for there to be more women bricklayers? So is it important for us to try to open up space for more women? And you think, well, it makes sense. It's a physical demanding job, and not that some women can't do it, but typically that is more related to man just because of biological reasons. Men are typically stronger and are just cut out for that type of job. Well, I look at teachers. Now, I've walked in my wife's classroom when she had one. I think when I walked in one time, she had 17 5-year-olds, and I was standing there and just began to sweat. And I told her, I wasn't there 5 minutes, and I told her, I've got to get out of here or they're going to put me in the penitentiary because I was ready to kill some of these kids. Yet that is her existence. And she didn't have an aide or anything. She has to manage. It's like herding cats. And it was just chaos. And you tell them one kid to do something, these other kids are climbing up. I mean, it was just like Thunderdome and Mad Max. It just wasn't any rules in this place. And it wasn't like it, back when you and I were going to school, because you sat in your desk very quietly. And if you thought about getting up, you were going to get a ruler or a paddle or whatever. But now it's all about they play in centers and they do. Anyway, there's no doubt that more women are going to be in those professions because I believe women have certain traits. It has nothing to do with intellect. It has nothing to do with leadership ability or anything else. It has something to do with how they are created. They have a more nourishing spirit, more encouragement. They are kind. They are softer. They are more gentle. I am not cut out, and most men are not cut out to be a kindergarten teacher. And so when you look at that, it doesn't surprise me at all. But I think it's also encouraging to see that some of those positions, that it really doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. Those are kind of more extremes on those levels that we just discussed. But there's lots of positions that in the past that women just didn't have access to because of how women were overall regarded in society as being inferior or not having to take care of the household, that you could always pay a woman less because it was just a secondary position for her husband. Just all those kind of rules of society have changed. And I think it's empowered women to utilize their full abilities and skill sets. And even more encouraging, what you found out is women can do so much more than we ever gave them credit for and end up being tremendous assets to the businesses they work for.
Man, I would love to encapsulate that segment right now. I mean, we can use that for our reel on Instagram, but that is a great way and a perfect and respectful way to acknowledge where women and men are in the workplace in this country. I think you just said it wonderfully. You talked about the biological situations. And what's a beautiful thing about this is like you said, women didn't have access, or they weren't allowed to have access. I went to an express oil change the other day and I had a woman change my oil. I had never had that happen before. I've never seen a woman mechanic before. It was super cool. And she was really good at it. And we even go back to our armed forces. I was watching the FDR documentary over Memorial Day, and they talked about Riveter, Rosie the Riveter, and how many how many women? And again, that was a situation where we had to have women build airplane engines and tanks and everything else, or else we weren't going to win World War II with our allies. And so, yeah, you go for armed forces and all these things that are typical, you know, firefighters, police officers, all these things. And now, you know, women have access to all these different things. And in some cases, you know, well, they don't want to do that. And that's fine. And thank goodness there are men who do want to do a lot of those jobs. And so it works out very, very well. But now women, at least 100 years since this Department of Labor stat came out, they have the access to be astronauts, to be presidents, to be all these things that, that they should have had access to their entire life. So I think you said that very eloquently, and I think that was very, very good at what you said. You know, there were a million different ways I wanted to get into this because that question from Bethany was so broad. And I think a lot of people get into situations where we know that women, obviously, they get pregnant, and that certainly can change the workplace and the way they work, and they must have paternity leave. I don't know too, how many fathers actually get maternity leave. Usually the guy continues to work, and the woman stays home, and she watches the child, and sometimes she stops working. Sometimes you may be in a situation where, you know, you start a family right after your honeymoon and she's working and he's working and you're like, hey, listen, one of us is going to stay home with the children. And that's what it was two generations ago with my father and my mother. My mom stayed home the entire time. And then something changed a little bit as the kids become more self-sufficient. The wife maybe hasn't worked or the mother hasn't worked for a period of time. And then all of a sudden she wants to get back in the workplace. And that happened in my situation. I know it's happened with a lot of my friends who have families. What would you say, psychologically speaking, and as a boss and as a man who's been in the workplace for a long period of time, and of course you've been a leader in almost every place you've worked, but what would you say about a situation, or what's the best way to tackle that situation? You've been working as a man the entire time, you've been the provider, and all of a sudden your wife, the mother of your children, decides she wants to get back in the workforce.
Well, yeah. So let's look at this from a couple of different perspectives. So if you look at it from a husband's perspective, you know, some husbands are like, I want my wife to work because it helps with the finances. It helps keep them mentally engaged. And so I've always, you know, there's not a right or wrong to this. Everybody has to do what they feel like is in every circumstance is different. For me and my wife, I was just starting out in the military. We were so young when we were married and had our first child. But we made a commitment, and more so her. I credit her more than I credit me. She said, I want to be a stay-at-home mom until my kids get in school. And then we agreed. And so we just sucked it up and ate a lot of green beans mm-hmm. in those early years until the kids got in school. And then we said, okay, do you want to go to work or do you want to go to school? I said, you could do either or. So she said, I want to go to school. And so she ended up getting her degree so she could be in the teaching field, which she has ever since. And that's really how she's gifted. I mean, she's amazing in the classroom, loves kids, thinks everything they do is funny, and things that would make me, like I said, just want to cut my wrist. Just things that she enjoys and enjoys being with them and attaches to them. In the business perspective, you know, that was one of the things for many, many years is the reasoning that businesses kind of gave for why men and women typically were a little bit different in terms of pay. Now, I'm going to say what the reasoning was. I'm not saying I agree with the reasoning, but what the reasoning was is that, you know, you could at any given time, a woman who potentially would have a baby and then leave the workforce, be out on maternity leave, and you could fill a temp in, but you couldn't replace that woman while she was out. So it would be disruption. But there was always that loss of productivity, somebody who was normally doing a job to a certain standard. Mm-hmm. Now you're bringing in a temp, it's not going to do it as well. But there was always that risk and upheaval. And so that was one, not the only reason, but one of the main reasons they always cited for. And then plus there was the stigma of, as I mentioned before, the man is the breadwinner in the house. If a woman's coming to work, it's just to supplement what the husband's already bringing into the house. But I think, you know, that's 30s, 40s, 50s mindset. I think we're well beyond that. And So I will tell you, those kind of things are not a consideration. I will tell you, though, going back a little bit to the biology, when I was in the Army, it came up real issues about men and women. And the question always came up about combat.
Yeah.
And do women belong in combat? And the general consensus was, among my fellow soldiers, was this: if a woman can come into to this space, they are welcome. Any person is welcome as long as they can maintain the standards. I think where a lot of the resentment came in was, for instance, there was an 18th Airborne Corps standard, which I was part of at one point in my life. And so when you would have to do, I think it was 12 miles, if I remember right, and you had to do it a certain amount of time. You had to run 4 miles at 9 minute mile pace. Mm-hmm. There was all these just physical demands and standard. And when you get into stuff like Rangers and special forces and all those kind of things, not only are the demands very, it's not just the mental, it's incredibly physical. And you've got other people on a battlefield that are dependent on you to be able to pull your weight. And so it had nothing to do with the intellectual capabilities of women, but it had everything to do with when you're out on the battlefield, this is not a time for social experimentation.
Yeah.
And so what you would find, though, is due to pressure, you would find standards all of a sudden being cut back because of women. And to include women. And we're like, well, okay, is the standard for this, whatever it is it the right standard? If it's the right standard, don't compromise the standard to be able to be more inclusive. Because this, if this is truly the standard and you're compromising the standard, it could affect lives.
Yeah.
And could cause lives. That was where a lot of the resentment came. And that came across as, well, there's a lot of misogynist pigs in the military. And I'm not denying that there was some misogynistic attitudes, but I will tell you, as a whole, there was not resentment of women being in the military, because the vast majority of women. Now, I was not an infantry officer on the front lines or anything like that, but I was what they call combat support. So I was in communications. A lot of women in our field, and some of the best officers, smartest, most capable officers were women. So it gets to be depending on, there's so many, that's why I don't like slogans, because sometimes slogans just shut down the discussion. And it's really such a complex issue. Like it's a little bit like when you say, well, we want more women, or we may want more of this or more of that. Like in the NBA right now, there's a discussion. Okay, you know, 12% of people in the NBA are white.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's very out of balance. So do we want a system that to get more equity and more balance? Do we want to make sure that there's more white people, opportunities for white people in the NBA? You see, it kind of goes, and you're like, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, you want the best NBA players on the table. You just want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to compete for that.
No, and I think that's where a lot of people don't get this. And I agree with everything you're saying. A lot of people want to be all inclusive, but do we want someone that does not do a job as well as someone that is obviously a different gender, only in case to have that inclusivity? And most people would say no. I mean, you know, if I'm on a battleground and I know that I'm standing beside a woman who cannot carry me off that battleground, I want to be with a guy if I'm going to be in the shooting range. I want someone who That's can right. drag me off the field. Or if I have a man firefighter and a woman firefighter, it's not to say there aren't women firefighters that are stronger than men firefighters. I get
sure.
that. But if I need someone to carry me off a ladder from the 27th floor, I'm going to probably go with a guy firefighter. The one thing I do think is really interesting, though, and again, we're going over 100 years since the Department of Labor came out with this list in 1920, now the most recent in 2020 and 2021, is because of our technology and because of machinery and because of computers and everything, there's a lot of heavy labor jobs that we don't have anymore. that you know, we don't have to lift heavy things anymore. You never see women work in factories because there was so much hard labor and heavy labor. You didn't see women in coal mines. You don't.
Right.
Because it's heavy labor. It's heavy. It's hard. And now with machinery and you're pushing buttons and you're moving thousands of tons of stuff, whatever, with cranes and things like that, I do think that opens up a lot of not only managerial positions, but also labor positions for women in the world we live in.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it goes back to the overall point, which is it's overall, I don't think we live in a society that looks at women as being inferior. The truth of the matter is, if you look at over my, so I have, I think if I'm not missing somebody, I have six director positions right now. Five of those are women. And the truth of the matter is that I tend to, if all things being equal, I tend to lean towards hiring a woman over a man. And I've talked with people about that, and they say, well, why is that? Because you get the traditional thing. Well, you put a, and women tell me this all the time. So please, I want my audience to understand this. This is feedback I've gotten from the women that I hire into these positions, is they bring up concerns about having too many women in the same place, because there's tendencies to be struggles to work together and be cohesive as a team. And those are concerns that they've brought to me. But the truth of the matter is, with all things being equal, I prefer to hire women, because I have found that women are more attention to detail. They're more committed oftentimes to what they're doing, at least in the nonprofit space, where you have to mix both professional quality of excellence, but you also have to mix that with a compassionate spirit. And I've just found, as a rule, that women fit that bill more so than men. And so I will be the first to admit I'm kind of biased towards women in that regard. However, if I'm completely honest, and I always get myself in trouble when I say, if I were completely honest, I understand that there's different dynamics. Look, we can't ignore biology. And like, just so men are, as a rule, of course, there are exceptions. Men are going to be physically stronger. Typically, a man's upper body is 40 to 50% stronger than a woman's body. Some jobs, that's not relevant.
Yeah.
If, you know, that doesn't matter. But in jobs that do, we should not pretend that it doesn't matter. We should recognize that. And so we should also recognize that men and women biologically are different and battle different things. We know that women, on a month-to-month basis, their hormones are much more in fluctuation than a man's. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say, that's not me secretly calling women crazy or emotional beings or people who can't control those emotions, but it's a realistic barrier that at times we all know. We've been married. We know that sometimes our wife, they have hormone imbalances. And so they might respond in a way that they don't typically respond to.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that men don't exhibit any of that, but I'm just saying that goes along with it. And what I don't like to do is pretend those things don't exist, but I also don't want to allow people to use those as excuses to prevent women from taking on more responsibility because they say, well, a woman, you know, that was in the military when they got up in the leadership, like 2-star, 3-star, 4-star general. It's like, well, you don't want a woman doing combat maneuvers, leading combat maneuvers, because depending on when it is, they can be more emotional, and you don't want somebody who's overly emotional making military decisions. And I don't buy that. But I do think on a day-to-day basis, we know that just as a rule that women just biologically are going to be more up and down than men. And I will tell you something. I've got a director of admin that you can't tell from 1 minute to the next. I mean, she's tough, but she's fair. And she tries to, she's the one that makes the internal adjustments as to how she responds to other people.
We only have a few minutes. Yeah, we only have I love your conversation. We only have a few minutes left, and I wanted to get to something. I had a friend of mine, and another reason why I came up with this topic today, we did, I got a text from a friend of mine who has been married for 18 years. They have three children. They're all now 18, 16, and 14, and his wife has decided she wants to go back to work. Well, yeah. He doesn't want her to go back to work. He likes the way she keeps the house. And so I want to get into that. But he sent me a very interesting text. He said, women want some jobs that men don't want to give up. And men usually don't want the jobs women do best. And I said, that's very interesting, because there's a lot of things that men don't want to do because we know women could do them best, but there are some jobs that men do that women want, and we don't want to give up that power. His situation, and then we'll fly. We could probably get another whole show out of this. You know, when you get married, you got to discuss your roles, and you got to discuss what your marriage and what your relationship and what your family is going to look like. It amazes me how many people get married and don't discuss how many children they want first. Or what religion are we going to bring our children up in? Or where are they going to go to school? Or what if I get transferred? What are we going to, you got to discuss these things. You know, you get married, you have a honeymoon, 9 months later, she's having the first child. And you're like, okay, that's too late to decide whether you want to have another child or not. You need to discuss these things. Now, it can certainly change because our jobs change, our environment changes, our atmosphere. And so he was like, you know, here we go. And I won't even mention his name, but he's like, she's going to want to go out. She's asking me for $10,000 to start this business she wants to start. And that means that she's going to be working 40 hours a week. And that means my laundry's not going to get done. My dinner is not going to be served to me. That means I'm going to be driving kids to soccer practice on weekends. And I was like, whoa, check it back, dude. She hasn't even taken a job yet. And these are things that married couples must sit down and discuss. The old saying, happy wife, happy life. If this is something she truly wants, and I get it. I mean, if I was, I can never speak for a woman, but if I was a woman that stayed home with three snot-nosed kids changing diapers and driving them to soccer practice and stuff for 10, 15 years, and you're sitting there in your upper 30s, maybe mid 40s, and you need... A happy wife is, in fact, a happy life, because if your wife isn't happy doing what she's doing and she's done her job and she wants to get back in the workforce because she enjoyed that, maybe she was in the workforce, maybe she was making more money than you were when you got married, you've got to allow her the opportunity to do that, because that's what's called a well-rounded life. And golly, us guys, we have not been really good at working, because we use our work as crutches to stay away from the home, to stay away from our children, to, just push off marital issues. I got to work late again tonight, or I'm going to have to go back on the road next week. I can't tell you how many of my friends could do work from in town, but decide to fly out every week because they just want to get away from those things. And it's what they own. It validates their existence in a marriage and a family because, well, I got to fly to Dallas again this week because I'm going to make more money for the family. Can you briefly talk? We only have a couple minutes. Briefly talk about that, then we can get back into it next week.
Yeah. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, my wife does this. So she's out for summer every year. Right now, as we're recording, she's out, and she kind of has a laissez-faire attitude where it's just her time, and she goes shopping. She sit by the pool. She do whatever she wants to do. But then when she comes time, she picks up every dirty dish and everything when she's off. And when she gets ready to go back to school, she says, all right, now I'm starting back next week. And I need your help and all that. And I'm still the biggest slob in the world. I don't do what I need to do. But the reality is, when you say as a spouse, when your spouse says, I want to go back to work and I want you to support me, whatever that looks like. And the very first thing you do is go down the laundry list of all the ways it will affect you negatively in your life. Well, that's the answer right there. That's an inward thinking. That's a selfish. That's not what any, I think, rational person or counselor would say. I get it. I absolutely get that emotion, because it is nice to have my wife available to do anything I need her to do. Anything I think about, I can text her. Hey, run by, do this, grab the cleaners, whatever that I can't do. But the bottom line is, it has to be what's in the best interest. And so I think any healthy marriage would not put a spouse, male or woman, in positions that is not in their best interest.
Montgomery Area Food Bank, he is the CEO down there, mafb.org. They do wonderful work. We're going to be adding a brand new show to the TKR lineup, specific to the Montgomery Food Bank that we're super excited about as they work in conjunction with, of course, Feeding America's Michael Coleman, the CEO down there. Michael, thank you so much for all your time. Great conversation. We'll catch up next week.
Looking forward to it, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.